Chaim, I'm a sexaholic. Okay, the fourth step in the white book. I think we should pay attention to this. My 8 years in experience in recovery, I guess this is the reason why most people don't stick around. And this is the reason why most people don't get sober. And this is why the rest of the people that do stick around and do get sober end up losing it and going back out there. And then there's those few remaining souls that stick around, stay sober, keep coming back. Their lives get better, and the program works for them. So I don't want to be part of the people that one day also find myself out there wondering why the program doesn't work. I want to stick around, and I want the blessings to keep coming. So making the wrongs right, step 4 through 10, the toughest act in town. Sadly, many men and women with years of physical sobriety on 12-step program never make the breakthrough into the heart of the program and true recovery. That means you could be in meetings with people that have years of sobriety. They never made the breakthrough to the heart of the program and true recovery. The biggest obstacle seems to be steps 4 through 10, the core substance of the program, not steps 1, 2, and 3. We have it all wrong. Step 1, 2, and 3 allows me to not go to strip clubs, allows me not to masturbate in the bathroom. But the core of the program, the happiness, the reason why people stick around is because of steps 4 through 10, not because of steps 1, 2, and 3. Again, the biggest obstacle seems to be steps 4 through 10, the core substance of the program. It is these steps that seems to be the least realized and actual experience. When first exposed to these steps, many of us balk. The process of righting wrongs is foreign to us. It seems light years away in another dimension. We can't connect with it. We either dismiss it out of hand, or say to ourselves, I'm doing fine just like I am. Most people stick around program with steps 1, 2, and 3. I'm doing fine. I'm scared to get to the amends. I'm scared to move on. And what ends up happening is one of the three things. They either stay drunk. They either have physical sobriety, but yet their life is unmanageable. And then what ends up happening is they leave program. And then people stick around program, stay sober, but then find themselves drunk, or stay sober and they hang on to every last little bit, hoping to find some serenity and happiness, and then eventually it busts. Because the reason I'm masturbating is I'm in pain. So if I'm in a program and I'm in pain, I'm going to masturbate. I need something else. It is as though we will go to any length to avoid doing what is required for our healing. When some members see that such persons are captive to externals rather than have an awakening to life. I found in my 8 years here, so what happens? I'm sitting here and I'm still in pain. So the only thing that's going to make me feel better is like people share, cookies, running around, food, money, fame, attention, self-seeking, rage, externals, because I'm still in pain. And then what ends up happening if sobriety is all there is, I want no part of it. That's what ends up happening. So if this is sobriety and this is recovery, what the hell am I around? Boom, they're out. That's why from the 13 people that were in recovery when I came in, there's exactly 4 left. From the 100 people that came in and out of, I'd say 150 by now, people that came literally in and out of program, there's like 50 working members of recovery. Because why do I want a part of this? It doesn't work. Why should I stick around for it? It sucks. So I don't want no part of it. There are a few things so pitiful as an aborted spiritual life. The amazing thing is that we can give the appearance of life even though we are dead. We could give the appearance of life even though we are dead. So basically, the clue and the understanding of why program doesn't work is because, in short, we don't work it. Very simple. Very simple. Never let a guy in recovery tell you the program's not working for me. I'm working with program and I took an action of lust. If I'm working the program, I don't take actions of lust. If I'm working the program, I am happy, joyous, and free. If I'm not happy, joyous, and free, that means I'm not working the program. It's my job to figure out what that means. It's my job to go to the old timers, to go to God humbly on my knees and say, teach me the program. Even if I'm around for a while. Even if I'm around for a while, something I'm missing. So teach me the program. Okay. I'm willing to go to any lengths to get it. That's what we committed. And if you're not, you might as well leave now because it's not going to work anyway. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Stick around because eventually it will work. Don't leave. Don't leave. Stick around because eventually it will seep in. But that is the basics and the crux of the program. That is the crux of the program. It's a program of taking actions, of working the steps, and we become happy, joyous, and free. And I said this a few times already in the groups. Go around. I don't know any guy in our fellowship that has gone through the 12 steps, that goes to meetings and take other people through the 12 steps, and they won't tell you that the life is great. Not that the life is okay and it's managed, the life is great. So if life is not great, it's simply because we're not working the program. And I know it myself, because I've gone through stages in recovery where it's like I got fed up and I got busy with life and I just want to make money and I just want to be there for my kids. Yeah, right. And I just want to. And there I find myself flirting with a girl in Florida. There I find myself playing again with my phone. The reality is the program brings me a happy, joyous, and freedom. I don't have a filter on my phone. And I never take actions on my phone. That's a crazy thing to say if you know me from the early days of recovery. I was so addicted to porn. You could have handcuffed me upside down and drowned me and I would have watched porn. Literally. I couldn't not watch. There was no way. Program, God is so big if we allow him to become big. So the fourth step is the crux of the whole program. 4 through 10. And that's what he writes over here. So besides the 1, 2, and 3, which is the foundation of the program, but you know something? If you drive around and you see an amazing foundation and the steel and the cement is huge, you can't live there. You can't live there no matter how strong that foundation is. You need the walls, you need the plumbing, you need the heating, you need the systems to operate. And if those systems are not there in place, I can't live there. Life will suck. And I will end up trying to find a new home. And that's what ends up happening. So in short, whoever didn't get a chance to do the fourth step, I am purposely, I hope I made the right decision, but purposely I didn't make any more copies. Because I think it's important, if you're really in the fellowship, find the copies, go to somebody and ask him to make it for you, or make the copies yourself. And don't give the excuses. And if you're not up to writing, say, God, please write for me. I'm just going to take this simple action, and it's called taking out a paper, taking out a pen. Now, God, you write. And when you do that, you will see your pen writing like you never wrote before. And you'll cry, and you'll laugh, and you'll want to act out, and you'll call somebody. But life will get better. And it does. And if you're not even willing to do that, call at least 5 people who have played around by, I'm going to do that fourth step, and see where they're holding. See how painful and sad their life is. And then call 5 people and see how blissful their life is. We lead with our weakness, but that's the only thing we do. We lead with our weakness, and then we share our gratitude of how great this program is and how life is. We're sticking our weakness. Life is amazing. Life is amazing. Sundays is the greatest day of life. Fridays. My son beer hugged me last night, like, oh, back to the regular school and everything. Life couldn't be better. And it's going to get better as we stick around in the program. And this idea of, but my brain wants me to act out and I'm going to fantasy, I'm going to die with that. But I don't want to get to a meeting and that's where my brain goes. That's where it went last night and that's where it went today in the morning when I woke up. And I just need to embrace that. I have a retarded brain. It takes me to the places that are the worst and the places that are the best, it doesn't want me to go. If anybody has any questions on the fourth step, I guess now, with their writing or with questions on how to do it, you could ask it now. Otherwise, you should really sit down with your sponsor. And if he doesn't want to do it because he's of the school of thought of I'm not doing it with you and you're doing your own program, then get another sponsor. You know, take your own recovery in your hands and get sober. You're going to die. Your sponsor's not going to be there for you when you're dead. You know what I mean? So I guess we'll start with questions. Please keep your question to literally like 20, 30 seconds. Let's go through like 5, 10 questions. And then I guess we'll wrap it up.
How do you pray for someone when your resentment is just too strong and deep and you're struggling to pray for that individual? How do you do it?
So what I've done in the past is the first thing is just write it down. Write down the resentment. I am resentful at, period. This is why I'm resentful. Make those checks. And then go through the list. Is it my self-seeking? Is it my pride? Is it my ego? Is it my low self-esteem? What is it about me that is causing part? Sometimes we can't see that it's all our issue. Part of it is my fault. Some of it is my fault. All of it is my. And then what's the exact nature of my wrong? Not the exact reason why I don't want to pray for that person. But what's the exact nature of my wrong? What am I bringing to this party? Sometimes we could walk into a simcha or to a party or something and the place looks miserable. At the end of the day, if I put on a smile and I walk over to that guy and I give him a 5 and say, hey, what's going on? How are you? Before I know it, I'm having a great time. If I walk in there and the place sucks and I sit down and I grab my herring, mild stuff, and I leave, what I do on the way home is F this whole place and it happens to be my wife's fault. That's what I do naturally. So it's really always my fault. If I'm spiritual, wherever I bring my body will become a spiritual and happy place. If I'm dead, if I'm spiritually diseased, then wherever I bring my body will become diseased. Then after that, you don't have to have the willingness to pray. And you don't have to be a lofty person. Just say the prayer. Just say the words. Don't feel it. The difference between an addict and a normal person is a normal person feels love towards a person and says, I love you. I feel love towards my wife, I say, I love you. I feel love towards my children, I say, I love you. I am not normal. I need to first say to my son, I love you, and then the feeling, maybe 5 minutes later, of love comes up. So I don't have to feel the feelings of praying for somebody. I'm not so spiritual. Most of the time I don't feel that gorgeous woman that I want to punch in the face because her husband is standing with a big smile and it looks like he just got laid. I don't want to pray for them. I want to murder them. I don't get those feelings of prayer. I get the feeling of anger and hate and rage. And then I just take the actions. May they be happy. May they take care of their children. May they have a beautiful sex life. Yeah, right. May they enjoy life. May they just take the actions and that's it.
How thorough of a analyzation of what effect and all that needs to be done. Like, you know, each incident, and there's hundreds of people, hundreds of incidents, where you can sit and analyze and go through them. And there's
It's a great question. So what I've done is, and it's very important to differentiate between therapy and 12 steps. 12 steps is a spiritual program. It's not about sitting and figuring it out and trying. It's allowing God to do the work for us. I don't have to do that much work. In comparison to the amount of acting out that I've done and insanity that was done to me, I would need to sit by a therapist, a shrink, a psychiatrist, pills, program all day and night, and I still wouldn't get to first base. I need to allow God to do it for me, and He's that big. But if I'm holding on, then he just can't because I'm fighting him. He's not going to sit there and unhandcuff me. If I let go, that's the what we always talk about in program, and say, God, you do it for me. The only thing I'm doing is my fourth step. Exactly as it's told. Make checks. What the hell does checks do on a piece of paper? I have no idea, but I became free of it when I did it. Why the hell sitting here and saying the serenity prayer all of a sudden gives me serenity or gives me a what's it called when doing this kumbaya? I have no idea. It just works. We have to stop trying to figure out the program and rather just allow God to do it for me. I have no idea why my whole life when I saw a woman on the street, you know what I mean? And why today, if I'm spiritual fit, in those days that I am, I'm okay. Why? I am. By taking the simple action. So that to be blunt and to answer your question, very not thorough. In my opinion, the more thorough we get, the more we're telling God to go somewhere. The more writing we do, the more we're telling God to go somewhere. The more we stop writing and we allow God to do the work for us, the more happy we become. There are people in this program that sit in therapy for years and give them hundreds of thousands of dollars and stay drunk or miserable. Now, I've been in therapy. I've been in group therapy. I've been in marriage therapy. I'm pro-therapy. I think therapy is amazing. And I think you should go if you need to go. But don't take that away from program. Program is a free gift. It's a dollar that you don't have to give. And the reality is, in 8 years, watching hundreds of people, I don't know one successful case of therapy. You understand that? I don't know one. What the hell are we doing there? The answer is, for myself, my experience, when I was in therapy, I wasn't ready to work the program. I was much more comfortable sitting with a woman, with a man, talking about philosophies of life than rather to live life in a spiritual manner. So the least thorough checks, writing, sponsor, taking direction, keeping a very not religious halacha, you know, whatever it means, but rather just doing and being happy, joyous, and free. Anybody else?
How do you figure out if you're having trouble with the part where you're wrong? How do you work that out?
When you don't see your part in it. It's a very good question. If I have a resentment, right, and I have a fear and I don't see my part in it, the simplest answer, and again, we like bigger and better, the simplest answer is just picking up a phone and saying, I am resentful at my father. The reason I'm resentful is because when I was a kid, he beat the shit out of me. I don't see a part in it. What the fuck? That's the feeling, right? And the answer is, by asking the question, you'll all of a sudden start realizing where your part is. If you don't, then most likely he'll point out to you your part. But in this case scenario, which is most people's problem, and I suffered from this very badly, teachers, parents, I think we all suffered from this majorly. Where's my part in getting beaten as a kid? And the answer is, then I did not have a part. But I have a part in it still today. You know why? Because the same character defects that I had back then of being the wise guy in class, by being the guy that had to like get into the Rebbe's face, by being the guy who always was the guy that had to show he's better, I still come to that today, to the table. As I worked on that, I forgived myself and I realized that I personally have no responsibility for them because I was a kid. But today I don't do those actions anymore and I feel much better. And what about the Rebbe, the teacher, the parent? They're sick people. God, give me the heart to forgive. My part in it is I'm going to masturbate myself to death because I was hurt when I was 8 years old. I'm going to stay miserable and sad and depressed because when I was 12 years old, I got locked up in a room. I'm going to keep on fighting the system, institutions, and everything, and I'm not going to listen to any rabbi, teacher, leader, sponsor, program member, because when I was younger, I was abused by the system, so I don't want to have anything to do with any authority anymore. That's my part in it, that I'm allowing something that happened 20 years ago to run the rest of my life and my children's life and grandchildren's life, because I'll affect everybody as a result of getting beaten when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So to keep it simple, if I don't know my part in a resentment, just ask somebody, could you help me get through it? But don't stay on that one resentment or that one fear. What we do is, see, I don't know, screw this whole paper. You know what I mean? Screw it. Have enough humility to say, I don't know. I guess I'll finish off with this crazy story. When I was doing my fourth step, so I was writing it, and this part came up, you know, with the parents and teachers and everybody beating me and whatnot, right? I couldn't take it. It was so painful. I didn't know what to do with myself. My wife always reminds me. I took the pad of paper and the pen, and I threw it across the room in rage. And I stormed out of the house. Like, literally, I was beyond myself. What part do I have in getting tied to a pole? What part do I have in getting the shower door kicked in? What part do I have of all the hell that I was put through? Like, how do I have a part? And I remember sitting out there, and it's like, I'm going to masturbate. I'm going to go to a strip club, because I don't give a crap, because these people, and I'm entitled, because look what was done to me. I remember vividly, like, standing in front of my house, like, screaming. And with the last, like, energy I had, I picked up the phone. I called somebody by the name of Tommy. And I said, Tommy, this is what's going on. I was crying to the guy. I didn't know what to do. And he said, do you have any children? And I said, yeah. And he said, how old are they? I said, I have a 2-year-old in a crib, and I have a 4-year-old. He said, put down your step work. Don't do your step work. Go into your kids and just put your hand on them and tell them what you're doing to protect them, that you don't end up doing to them what was done to you. Tell them in their sleep how you're going to stay sober tonight in order that you don't do to them what was done to you, because your parents didn't want to do it to you, and your grandparents didn't want to do it to your parents, and your teachers didn't want to do it to them. But put your hand and tell them you're willing to go to any lengths so that it's not done to them what was done to you, and how proud you would be if you knew what your dad is doing. And I went inside, and I'll never forget, it was such a spiritual moment. I sat there crying. I couldn't even get the words out of my mouth. Because I've hit my kids. I don't care if they were 2 or if they were 4. I was hitting. I was screaming. I was raging. I was exactly what I didn't want to be. What I swore never to become, that's exactly who I was becoming. Because I got news for you. Years later, my father disclosed to me that the same stuff was done to him. And he swore never to do it to me. But abuse is abuse, because we don't know how to do it different. I'll never abuse my wife. I'll never hurt my wife. You crazy? I was doing the exact same things. And still till today, every once in a while, I just go into my kids' room and I just smile and I just tear up. If you knew who your father was. Like, my wife tells me today, the gift time that you're giving these kids, it doesn't make sense. I shared it in the meetings recently. 2 weeks ago, I raged at my kids and my wife, like, badly. Haven't done it in a very long time, like, I don't know, years. And at the Shabbos table, I was talking just about this idea of forgiveness and love. And I said, remember this past week, Tati, like, screamed and yelled at everybody? My wife turned around like, you did? I said, you know, right? Yeah, I did it at the kids also. And my daughter's like, yeah, I remember. My son's like, what? When? He was the one that got the most scrammed up, but I made amends to him and I sat with him. And then I just brought it up and we spoke about it openly at a Shabbos table. There was no secrets that Tati's going to shul to the mikveh and he's going to come home with a Dvar Torah. There was an open conversation of Tati screwed up. Tati, the melech, you know, screwed up, and he screamed and yelled and we were talking and we were laughing. My wife came over with me after the meal with, like, so overwhelmed. Like, these kids don't even chap. This doesn't exist in the human race, where a father just unloads himself and easily talking about his character defects. And I spoke to them what came up for me, why I raged, you know? Not in a teaching way, just in a humble relationship way. That's how we change. That's how we become different. worth it. I guess let's wrap it up. So just one last thing, I guess. If you didn't do the fourth step, if you need some more time, just do it. Just write it. Just check. The fifth step, keep it very simple. Just find somebody you're comfortable with, preferably a sponsor. Just tell it over to him. Go through it. If you're not up to it yet, you're not comfortable doing, still come to the next workshops and everything. I guess we'll finish off the fourth next time we meet up on Wednesday. Yeah, you'll send it out. We'll finish it up on Wednesday, and then we'll move on to step five.